How do you write a good recommendation letter for a great staff member? And what do you do if you're asked to write a recommendation letter for someone who's not so great? That's our focus today on the Instructional Leadership Show. So welcome to the Instructional Leadership Show. We normally do this for members only, but I wanted to go live and share this a little bit more broadly to talk about this idea of recommendation letters, because they play a key role in the profession. They play a key communication role between leaders in different organizations. And a lot of this is just very poorly understood. And if you are in the position of needing to write a recommendation letter, or you're asking for a recommendation letter, I want you to know how this works, and I want you to be able to succeed, whatever your role in the process. So let's jump right in. This is episode 112, Writing Effective Recommendation Letters for Staff. And our essential question in this episode is, how can I write recommendation letters for staff that'll have a positive impact on the profession? Now, often we don't think in terms of our obligations to the profession. We think about our particular school, we think about our students, we think about maybe, you know, the district and our own needs, but we don't think about the broader profession that we're a part of. And that's where we tend to go wrong with recommendation letters, when we think in too small of a circle. We think too selfishly about our needs when it comes to getting recommendation letters for ourselves and getting writing recommendation letters for staff members. But they play a really key role in sharing information between employers and potential employers. And that means that as a leader, you have a critical role that you've got to understand in order to play that role correctly. So I want to talk today first about the ethical obligations, and then we'll talk about what to do if you have to write a recommendation letter for someone who's not so great, if you have some concerns, or even if someone is really, really bad, maybe even criminally dangerous, and you're asked to write a recommendation for them. And then we'll talk about what to do if you're asked to write a recommendation letter for somebody who's just amazing and you want to help them go far, you know they're going to do great things and you want to support them. We'll talk about how to make sure that your letter does the job that it needs to for candidates like that. So first, let's talk about our ethical obligations. As leaders, we have two primary ethical obligations. One is to help good candidates get good jobs, right? We want people who have the most potential to have the most influence. And I'm not saying there that we want the best people to end up in like the richest schools. That's not what I mean by that, that we need to help people kind of migrate to the higher SES schools. But we do need to help the people with the greatest impact end up in roles where they can use that impact, right? Where they can use their skills, they can lead at a higher level, they can impact more students. So when people are looking, you know, when people are trying to make a move, I believe that we're ethically obligated to help them. And I'd love to know what you think about that. So if you're joining us live, let me know what you think about that particular ethical obligation. But I feel pretty strongly about that one, that that it is our job to help people move up and move on when they're ready to. But it's also our obligation to warn other employers when we've got somebody that really does not need to be working in education, right? So recommendation letters play the role not only of helping people get jobs they should get, but also of helping people not get jobs they should not get. So let's talk about the professional context and how this all plays out. You know, I think the big mistake that we make is to think in isolated terms, right? To think in individualistic terms, that all I have to worry about is myself and the positions that I need to fill, or my school and the positions that my school needs to fill, or my district and the workforce that we have. I think we need to look more broadly and remember that we are part of a profession. We're part of a broader profession that people are going to move around within, and that's not a bad thing. And of course, many, many people will spend their entire career with one employer, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. I personally spent my entire public education career with one employer, Seattle Public Schools, and didn't really have a big reason to look elsewhere. I did apply to many other districts when I was moving into administrations, and that's typically part of it. I absolutely recommend that you do that if you're looking for a new job. Don't limit yourself to one employer, and don't feel angry if someone who works with you is applying to other districts. I mean, that is just part of the process, and people's loyalty should not be questioned when they do that, because I believe that our primary loyalty is to the profession and to our students, not to any particular boss or organization. I think that's a really key point here, that our loyalty should be to the profession, because that's ultimately what we belong to. Our relationship with any particular school or any particular supervisor is temporary, may last quite a long time, but is not ultimately what we're a part of. It's not the bigger thing that we're a part of. And this, people get mixed up about this in some ways that can be very unhealthy. I get questions all the time. Every year I get questions from people who say, you know what, my boss told me they're not going to write me a recommendation letter because they don't want to lose me. And I think, well, that's super dysfunctional. That's unhealthy in terms of, of trying to like trap somebody in a job and say, I'm going to give you a bad reference, even though you're great, because I don't want to lose you. And it would be difficult for me to replace you. I promise you, people tell me that every single year, that they're stuck in that situation where their boss will not let them go, will not give them a good reference, even though they deserve it, simply because they don't want to lose them. And you might think of this as kind of being trapped, right? Like your boss is trying to like keep you in a jar, like Tinkerbell, you know, in a glass jar. You put the cork in and say, nope, you're mine now. I'm keeping you. You cannot use your talents elsewhere. You can only use them for me. I think that's kind of sick. I think that is wrong. I think it is unethical. And refusing to let someone go should be something that we really recognize as a profession is just unethical. So if someone asks you for a recommendation letter, I know you don't always have time, but I do think ultimately we are obligated to help people out when they're ready to move on. So obviously, that doesn't mean you have to drop everything and spend a whole day clearing your schedule and writing a recommendation letter the moment they need it. I think there are ways, there are good and bad ways to ask for a recommendation letter, but ultimately, we do need to help people in this this way when they ask us. And withholding that recommendation, withholding that endorsement is not a good employee retention strategy. If that's how someone is holding on to their employees, they probably will lose them faster than they think. This is a really a counterproductive strategy for holding on to good employees. So we've got to recommend good people. We've also got to recognize that our obligation is to make sure that people who are not good, who do not need to be in the profession, don't remain in the profession and don't get jobs elsewhere. So let's talk now about dealing with bad candidates. And I hate to start negative, but as you'll see in just a few moments, all of my positive recommendations are to simply do the opposite of these things. So I want to paint both sides of the picture very clearly so you can know which game you're playing, right? Which exercise you are conducting. And I want to start on the extreme side of bad candidates, not just people who are kind of, maybe okay, but let's start by thinking about people who are actually criminal, like who are actually abusing children, molesting children, doing all the things that end up in the newspaper and hopefully land them in jail. This happens more often than we would like to talk about in our profession. And there is a longstanding tradition of passing the trash. And I don't like that term a whole lot because I think it's a little bit dehumanizing. But the reality is that there are people who abuse children and who work in the education profession in order to have access to the children that they are seeking to abuse. And I think that's pretty sick. And I think we need to look for any flaws in our system that allow that to take place. And a couple of years ago, there were some very high profile cases in the state of New Jersey, probably almost everywhere. This is a problem. It may not always make the headlines, but in New Jersey it did. And there was actually a law passed that was designed to encourage reporting and to cut down on this tendency that seems to exist within our profession for reasons that we're about to get into, of getting people to move on when they have exhibited some sort of criminal or abusive behavior toward students, and not trying to get them out of the profession, but just trying to get them out of one particular job. And I think this was more common. The further back you go in time, the more common this was. And I think we're finally starting to kind of root out this practice, but it does still happen where someone obviously is doing something that they should not be doing. It may be very difficult to prove. So in order to make up for that lack of evidence, the organization or the supervisor will try to get the person to move on and, kind of wash their hands of that particular person and yet allow them to remain in the profession and not do the hard part of following through and making sure that they don't just repeat the same behavior elsewhere. So we've seen this in a variety of sectors, in a variety of types of institutions. It happens in public schools, private schools, and I think across the profession, across all sectors, we've got to change our behavior in terms of enabling this kind of thing. So New Jersey passed a law to prevent this kind of thing from happening. I'm not sure how effective it has been. Ultimately, I think it comes down to how we act as leaders to make sure this thing kind of thing doesn't happen. Specifically, what we've got to make sure that we are not doing is trading a neutral or positive reference for a resignation. And I have heard this kind of thing over and over again. I was reading a case study, a kind of a classic case study of the principalship from decades ago. And there was an example of this kind of thing being done with a custodian who was possibly molesting children, was just kind of given a pink slip and shown the door, and no kind of criminal or career repercussions were pursued. And that kind of cover up, that kind of pass the trash, that kind of shuffle people off to a new workplace and just don't worry about them anymore, I think that really fails our huge ethical obligation that we have to students and to the profession. We cannot cover things up. You know, we've seen what happens when organizations do that, and it's just not good. It's not good for kids. It's not good for society. It's not good for the organization. So we're going to get back to talking about reference letters in just a moment, but I have to say, for those severe cases of misconduct, we are way beyond the scope of what a recommendation letter is supposed to handle. So there are situations that need to be referred to human resources. There are situations that need to be referred to law enforcement, to child protective services, to other agencies, to licensing authorities. You know, in most states, there's some sort of system for people to get on a registry if there's just a suspicion, right? And obviously it's very difficult to prove a lot of things, but in most states, to work with children, you don't have to actually have been criminally convicted, to get on kind of the barred from working with children list. I think that typically there is some sort of other protective registry, and it's our obligation to learn how that works and to make sure that we are using that when the evidence calls for it, and not just passing people on and saying, hey, you know what, I'm not going to give you a bad reference, but you need to not work here anymore. Go find somewhere else to work. Well, we know when we do that, people repeat their bad behavior to the detriment of students. So having said that, we're going to get back to talking about recommendation letters now. If severe misconduct is occurring, please don't try to handle that yourself. You know, get help, consult with your supervisor, human resources, law enforcement, child services, you know, all the appropriate agencies who deal with that kind of stuff. Because, you know, honestly, we have to, you know, the buck does stop with us for a lot of things, but not for criminal kinds of issues. So let's get back to talking about just good old fashioned recommendation letters. I have to tell you a story now about a fake reference. When I was an admin intern at a school briefly, this happened, and the principal took the time to explain to me what had happened because it was so bizarre. And she said, I don't know if you're ever going to see this again, but let me tell you what happened here. We actually had someone fake a reference check, and it was bizarre because the person had already been hired at the school where I was interning. They'd already received the job, and then we got a phone call from someone who was pretending to check a reference on that person in order to supposedly hire them for a different job. And I think the reason this person did that was as some sort of negotiation gambit. I think maybe they were trying to negotiate for different duties or higher salary or something. And they wanted the principal to worry about losing this candidate that they had just hired, right? So this fake reference check was made, and I think it was not carried out very well, and the principal was savvy to it, called around a little bit, and realized that the person who was claiming to be in a certain role at a certain school didn't actually have that job, and that this was actually all engineered by the recently hired person and a friend of his. So that kind of thing does happen, and I just want to put that on your radar and explain just how simple it is to pull off something like that so that you can be on the lookout for it. It is very easy for people to get a burner phone at a convenience store or get a Google Voice number and forward it to their or someone else's cell phone and have a fake reference and, you know, be able to answer that phone and say, oh, yes, I was the principal. I'm the principal at such and such school, and I've been his supervisor for the last 5 years, and he's really great. You should definitely hire him. It's very easy for that person to just be the candidate's friend answering the phone, or in some cases that are particularly brazen, even the candidate himself or herself. It seems to be mostly guys who do this, but it is possible to fake references. So what you can do is simply don't just call the numbers on someone's reference list. Don't just call the numbers that the candidate provides you. Use publicly available information. And if it says this person worked at Seaside High School, well, look up Seaside High School, see who the principal is, call the publicly available number for Seaside High School, and then verify, you know, if there's a cell number and the principal's out on vacation and you'd have to call the cell number to get a hold of the principal, you can call the school office and say, here's what I have for the principal's cell number. I need to do a reference check. Before I do that, can you confirm that this is the correct cell number? Usually they'll do that. They probably won't give you the cell number, but if you have a reference list that a candidate has provided, you can double check that with the school, and usually the school secretaries will have a big interest in helping you make sure that you get in touch with the actual principal and not someone who is posing as the principal. If something seems off, I think this is a place where it is worth trusting your gut, not to be making wild accusations, but if something just feels off, I think it is worth pausing and slowing down and saying, wait a minute, this just does not seem right. Let me look into this. Let me call some people. Let me reach out and see what I can find out. And this is a great time to use your network and say, okay, I know this principal over there, or I know the person who used to be there. Let me see if I can just find out a little bit more about this, because this feels weird. And I think that's what my principal did when I was an admin intern, and she got this phony reference check call that was just suspicious. Like, something just felt off about it, and she trusted herself enough to investigate that hunch and not dismiss it. So fake references are a thing. They're not super common, but you do want to be on the lookout for them. And having said all that, let's get into talking about the actual recommendation letters now. And I think often when it comes to bad candidates, people who really should not be in the profession or really just are not a good fit with the kind of school that they're working in, you're still going to be asked to write a recommendation letter for people like that, you know, on a fairly regular basis. And if you give them a recommendation letter that's terrible, that just rakes them over the coals and says, this person is terrible, they should quit, they should go find something else to do with their life, of course, they're not going to use that letter of recommendation, and that's going to be a waste of your time. On the other hand, if you don't give them a letter at all, they're not going to list you as a reference. They're going to try to list someone else. And of course, there are various legitimate reasons to bypass a reference. But if you are the principal, you probably, you know, if you are the person's supervisor, you probably do want to have the opportunity to speak to their qualifications. So what we're going to talk about now is how to use what I call the code to send a message to other administrators about a person's qualifications, about their drawbacks, and yet a letter that person will still use. They will say, thank you, I really appreciate it, this is great, I'll go turn this in with all my job applications. And because it's written in a special type of code, you can be honest, you can say things that are true, and you can send the message that you need to other administrators without it actually going in the trash. So here is how that works. To write a bad recommendation letter, don't say terrible things in the recommendation letter. You simply need to fail to say good things and say, contact me for more details. And you can fill out that letter, you know, make it not super brief. Like if it's a one-line letter, obviously that's going to be a dead giveaway. But you can list what the person has done. You can say what the job is. You can make comments about very perfunctory things, like they're punctual, they are a team player, they work hard. Things that will feel like a compliment to the reader, but are not what should be in a recommendation letter, which is much more specifics about their accomplishments, their contributions, their impact, and of course, your actual endorsement. So what you want to do in this kind of cover letter or recommendation letter is you want to actually fail to recommend the person, but still write a nice sounding letter. And that sounds more difficult than it is. So let's look at how this can work. First of all, to include just some basic duties, you can say things like they're a team player, they have good attendance, they put forth the necessary effort, they participate in required activities, they show up for their duty, they turn in their grades, etc., etc. All those things that sound positive. Like if you're not an expert on recommendation letters, you read that, it's going to sound fine. But if you are a principal and you read dozens and dozens of recommendation letters every year, you're going to see that one kind of sticks out like a sore thumb, and you're going to know that this person probably should not get in your yes pile. But we need to go beyond listing things that are not huge compliments, and we need to actually withhold the endorsement. And this is really key, because when you're asked to write a letter of reference, you don't actually have to recommend the person in that letter of reference. You just have to give the person a letter that they're going to be happy enough with that they actually use it, and then you can tell the truth in that letter. So here's how you can withhold your endorsement when you're writing a letter of recommendation. You can say something like, I am writing this letter for so-and-so, or I was asked to to write this letter for so-and-so. Happy to speak to my experience. This is a letter of reference. Like, just be very factual and not super enthused, right? I'm writing this in regards to X, who's applying for a position. Just don't say, it is my pleasure to recommend so-and-so, who is just the greatest candidate on God's green earth. Just don't say something great. And whatever you do say can be fine sounding. You know, it's factual that I'm writing this letter of reference for so-and-so. And the message will come through. Now, again, this doesn't deal with like criminal behavior, things like that, but it does fail to convey your endorsement, which is the job that you want that letter to do, right? You want that letter to fail to convey your endorsement if you're not endorsing this person. And at the end, there's a really critical type of phrase that you want to include. You want to invite the person to contact you so that you can share additional details without saying, again, that this person is great or you should hire them. You want to say something like, please contact me directly at such and such number if you're considering so-and-so for a position, and I'll be happy to provide additional details. Now, that wording may not be very different from the way you would end a great letter for a great candidate. But because you have failed to provide your endorsement, because you have failed to say the things that you should say in a letter for a great candidate, an experienced administrator can read between the lines and realize that something is off here, and maybe this person should not be on the short list. So, hope that is helpful. Let me know what you think about that for writing letters for bad candidates who do not need to get the job. Let's talk now about probably what you came for, which is how to write letters for good candidates. And I think we all, you know, we want to see people succeed when they've done a great job and they're ready for more responsibility or a new challenge. So here is how to help good candidates get the jobs they are seeking and take those next steps in their career. First, again, like I said, we're going to do the opposite of what I just said for bad candidates. You know, if you want to help somebody out, do the opposite of what you do for someone that you're not looking to help. First, you want to give your explicit and glowing endorsement. Now, when I say explicit, I do not mean with swear words. I mean you want to state very clearly that you support this person, you endorse this person, you recommend this person. They have your highest praise, your highest ringing endorsement. Say that in the letter, and it will come through loud and clear. And again, if you don't want to recommend someone, don't say that. Second, you want to describe the accomplishments that this person has pulled off in their tenure at your school very specifically. You want to say, here are some projects this person has worked on. Here is the impact that it had. Here's everything they did. But you don't want to focus on duties, right? You don't want to say they did recess duty and they turned in their grades and they showed up on time, right? Because those are the basic perfunctory things that are kind of a red flag if you see them in a recommendation letter. You want to focus on those accomplishments that really stand out. And we talk about this a lot on our other show, on Ascend Live. We talk about on your own resume, you should be listing your accomplishments, not just the duties that you had. Because when you're applying for a job and that job has typical prerequisite experience, everybody knows what duties you had in that job, right? If you're a classroom teacher, turning in grades is a part of your obligation. So you don't need to write on your resume, turned in grades. And by the same token, on a recommendation letter, you don't need to say this person turned in their grades, because that's a duty, not a standout accomplishment. And you want to conclude by almost kind of warning the reader that they're going to miss out if they don't hire this person. So let's go through some examples here. First, for your explicit endorsement. Again, you want to be very clear that you recommend this person if you recommend them. And again, if you don't recommend them, just leave this part out, right? It's my pleasure to recommend so-and-so for assistant principal positions in your district. I highly recommend. I recommend without reservation and would be happy to answer any questions you may have. So-and-so has my highest recommendation or my highest endorsement or my full support and endorsement as she pursues her next steps as a leader. You know, the more glowing and ringing you can make this language, the better, right? Because you want it to be clear that you mean it. And again, if you don't mean it, just don't say something like this, and the message will be loud and clear. Second, we want to talk about accomplishments, not duties. If there is a very strange combination of roles, right? Like if someone is the high school principal and athletic director in a small district, that's not an uncommon one. But if they're applying to a larger district, it might bear some explanation. So you might want to say what their specific job was, especially if there are just some unusual duties. You don't want to focus on duties, but you do want to make it clear like the capacity in which you work together. So I've seen a number of situations where letters of recommendation did a great job of describing just kind of an unusual work situation, and that's why they focused on duties. Otherwise, you want to talk about accomplishments, and you want from 1 to 3 big accomplishments that you can go into detail on. And this is probably where you will need the candidate to help you a little bit and say, hey, I know you were involved in the science curriculum adoption. Can you tell me a little bit about that? I want to write a little bit about that, but I don't know the details. Fill me in a little bit, and I'll kind of coordinate with you on what you're saying in your cover letter. I'll speak to that a little bit using different language, but addressing the same issues, and then it'll be really strong, right? That's a very powerful technique. So get input on what accomplishments you should talk about. Name specific projects, name the committee or the initiative or the, you know, whatever team somebody worked on to get something done. And figure out what they contributed and describe what they contributed and the impact that it had on students. And it's okay if it was entirely a team effort, right? We're not only focusing on individual efforts here. We're definitely going to give people credit for work they did as parts of teams. And depending on the job that the person has, you may want to go into additional details on key qualifications, right? If there's something very specific for the role, like maybe you have a dean of students who's just fabulous and you want to help them get an AP job, well, look at what their responsibilities are and look at what people are typically hiring for. You know, what do they want APs to be skilled in when they're hiring, and speak to that in depth. And you can look at your observation records, you know, if it's a position that you observe, you can look at, you know, specific strengths, specific areas of expertise that are relevant to the job. And then finally, we want to end the letter with a little warning that they're going to miss out if they don't interview this person. So we want to actually cue up the reader to, you know, we want to actually prompt the reader to interview this person. You know, so-and-so is a leader not to be missed. I strongly encourage you to interview so-and-so so you can see for yourself what a, you know, rising star so-and-so is, would be an asset to any organization, has demonstrated enormous promise and will excel in the assistant principalship or the principalship or whatever. Or so-and-so will be missed, but I can't wait to see the impact she has in a role with more influence or in a larger district or whatever. So you want to kind of give this sense of FOMO, right? This sense that this person is on a rising trajectory and will do great things, and why not do those great things in your organization? That's what you want them to feel as they read the letter. So give them that sense that they're about to miss out if they don't interview this person. So again, for a good recommendation letter, you want to give your endorsement explicitly, say that you endorse them, say that you recommend them, say that they have your highest praise, your highest endorsement, be specific about the accomplishments that they have pulled off on the job. Don't just list their duties, but go into some detail about some projects, and then warn the reader not to miss out on this candidate. And you might be thinking, okay, well, this sounds great, but this also sounds like kind of a lot of work. And the truth is, it is a decent amount of work to do a good recommendation letter for someone. And that's why I recommend, if you are looking for a job, or if you think you will be looking for a job in the coming year, the summer is a great time to ask for a recommendation letter. Because what you don't want to do is you don't want to say, hey, guess what? I'm applying for a job. It closes tomorrow, so I need a recommendation letter tonight. Okay? That is not a recipe for success. It's discourteous. It's kind of rude to say to someone, I need a recommendation letter right now. It needs to be really good. You need to drop everything else. Because the reality is, it's a lot of work. And they do need to drop everything else to write you a good recommendation letter. So ask long in advance. Ask for a draft. And if someone is asking you, be understanding, do what you can, you know, give them the best recommendation letter you can. And if you possibly have the time, slow down and write a letter that is detailed and specific to them. It is okay to use a template. It is okay to reuse something that you've written before, but only to a point. You want to be careful not to copy and paste too much. And I've seen this happen. This letter was sent to me by a client who'd gotten this recommendation letter for someone who liked him. It's a positive endorsement. But take a look at the language here. Always a pleasure to write a letter of recommendation for an individual who's demonstrated that they're well-deserving, work ethic, credentials, impressed by high level of consistency and job performance and professional responsibilities, high achiever, unsatisfied with average or ordinary results. Like, I get the sense that this person was proud of this letter, like this was some good writing, you know, that they put together for this, you know, this glowing recommendation letter. The problem is, I don't know if you've seen it yet, the problem is there is absolutely no clue about who this person is, or what job they held. This letter is entirely generic. It's entirely positive, but it's entirely generic. And you could swap out the name and maybe the gender. You could say, you know, I highly recommend her for, school counselor positions. Like, you could just very easily change a few words and use this letter for someone else. And I get the impression that that's exactly what happened here, that this letter was written maybe years ago, or maybe just recently, but for a whole bunch of people at once. And because of that lack of specificity, it's very difficult to pull evidence from this letter. So if I'm a screener, if I'm hiring, and this person has applied and they've turned in this letter of recommendation, the problem is it doesn't really say anything about the candidate. There's no accomplishment listed here. There are no specific qualifications listed here. It's simply an endorsement. And an endorsement is good. An endorsement is necessary, but it is not enough to make a candidate stand out. So please do not do this if you possibly have the time. Like, granted, this is better than nothing by far. And I said, yeah, this is a good letter, you should use it. But the problem is it's super generic, right? And probably other people have been given a nearly identical letter. So if that's the best you have, great, it's better than nothing. But, you know, if you can avoid putting people in this position of having a generic letter from you, I think it's better. You can use a template, you can reuse things, but put in the specifics, customize them as much as possible, and actually get input from the candidate. Hey, what do you want me to write about? I can put together a letter, but I want to use evidence that is specific to your time at this school and specific projects and committees that you worked on. So hope that is helpful. I wanted to give you a little bit of a preview of something that I've got cooking behind the scenes called Repertoire Content Creator. I'm very excited about this, and I've decided that recommendation letters are going to be one of the first documents that we put into the Repertoire Content Builder, Content Creator, so that you can build a good recommendation letter piece by piece, phrase by phrase, with multiple choice options for everything, and then places for you to fill in that specific evidence. So in everything I've just said, I want to put my money where my mouth is and actually make it easier for you to do this. So Repertoire Content Creator is under construction right now. Our development team is working on it right now, and I'm just going to give you a little behind the scenes view here. You will never see this in the app. This is simply kind of a mock-up. This is like a wireframe mock-up. You can see my ugly oval buttons and stuff. It'll look much better than this. This is just my mock-up here. And what this is going to allow you to do is select different phrases to include in your document. Now, recommendation letters will be one type of document. We'll have many other types, like different letters you need to send home to students and different letters you need to send home or send to candidates as part of the hiring process. We've got lots of ideas, but we're going to start with recommendation letters. And there are going to be fields that you fill in and that automatically get pulled in to the document, like the candidate's name, your name, the school name, how many years you've worked together, the position they're applying for, the position they work in. All of that you can fill out once. And then all of the phrases that you can choose from to write that letter, like this opening sentence is, I'm writing this letter to recommend so-and-so for such-and-such positions in your school or district. Well, we'll have 3 or 4 or 5 other options for your opening sentence, and each of them will pull in the candidate's name and the other information from those fields. So I'm very excited about this. We should get a significant progress done this month and probably get it live sometime next month. And that'll be available to our Instructional Leadership Association members. This is going to be great. I would love to know what you would like to have in that. So if you are an Instructional Leadership Association member, keep an eye out for a survey. I will be asking you for input and what you would like to see in that app. And we will do our best to deliver on as many of the key priorities as possible. And if you are not a member, there has never been a better time there was a better time to join. The best time to join was 5 years ago, because then you would have everything we've ever done. But the second best time is today. You can go to principalcenter.com/clearance, and we are having our year-end clearance sale. We are about to nuke a lot of our content in the dashboard. We're going to actually move it to a vault page, a special page that only our longtime members can access, so that if people join in the future, they're not going to see everything we've ever done. They're only going to see the new things, the latest and greatest. But we have a lot of stuff that is incredible, that is just, it wasn't this month, it was a couple months ago or further back, and we just can't continue to keep everything around forever. And I don't want you to miss out on access to that. So if you join the Instructional Leadership Association now through our year-end clearance sale, you will lock in that access. This is not the first time we've done this. We did this a couple years ago, and we just periodically need to because we have so much content. And there's great stuff that is going away, never to be seen again, unless you are a member before the deadline, which is coming up very soon. So watch your email for that. Go to principalcenter.com/clearance, and you can join for a whole year for $399, which is a big discount. This is a $47 a month program, which is $564 a year. So you can save $165 as an individual or $265 by joining as part of a group. So if you have two or more people, it's $299 for the entire year. You get repertoire content creator, our full archive of this show. This is our 112th episode. You get Ascend Live. You get a whole bunch of other things that you'll learn about at principalcenter.com/clearance. And that is what I have for you today. So thank you so much for being here. I appreciate your hearing me out on our ethical obligations. You know, I don't love to talk about our ethical obligations, because that's not the first thing anybody wants to hear, is what our ethical obligations are. But I think it's important. I think we do need to talk about it. And when it comes to letters of reference in particular, we've got to do some thinking, not just about ourselves and our own organizations and our hiring needs, but about the profession as a whole and how we meet the needs of kids across the world. So thanks so much for listening, and I will catch you next time. Take care.